Would you leave a multi-million dollar TV job if you thought it would make you a better person and a better parent? I did, and I'm going to tell you why on today's episode of Driven by Purpose.
Hi, everyone. My name is Sydney. Welcome to the very first episode of Driven by Purpose, a brand new show about amazing people who are trying to do good things in the world. You're going to love it. Enjoy the show.
This is Driven by Purpose, a show about finding your purpose, building fulfilling careers, and helping people with disabilities live better lives. Hosted by three men who've lived it and are here to help you do the same. Special thanks to our presenting sponsor, Clean Logic, a leading bath and skincare company and a true pioneer in creating inclusive workplaces and increasing employment opportunities for people with disabilities.
What's up, everybody? Yes, that little girl, that adorable little girl, is my daughter, Sydney. She's 9.5 years old, and she is amazing. She is my purpose. She, from the minute she was born, she's changed my life entirely in the best possible way. It was scary. I tell people all the time that you never prepare to have a kid with severe disabilities. It just happens, and that's exactly what happened to me in 2015. And all these plans that you have in life, you think like, oh, my life's going to go this direction, and it's going to happen this way. Throw those all out the window, because the second that you have a kid with severe cerebral palsy and brain damage, everything in your life changes, including mine.
Evan, we're so thankful to have you on our show and being a host with us, and really sharing those deep personal stories that I've heard with Mike over the years and knowing his story and with Rosie. So we're looking forward to you sharing these here. And we just want to thank you for being on the show, especially since I've known you since college. And one of my favorite things about talking about Evan is he had been one of the guys that started with TMZ early on. And I would always talk about my friend Evan and how he's the guy that busted the guy from Seinfeld and, you know, Ray Rice video and just the Donald Sterling story. So you're a guy that has just done a lot in the Hollywood area. And we know that you coming on here is just a big thing. But why would you leave TMZ to go after a purpose? Talk about your life of how you transition or coming from TV into where you're at today.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right. I was with Harvey Levin before TMZ. Like when I was in college, I was interning with Harvey at a show called Extra TV, and then Celebrity Justice was a show after that. And I got my start on Celebrity Justice as a PA. I was getting coffee for people, and I wanted to be a writer. And the guy who was the head writer at the time was a really, really sweet guy. He took me under his wing. One day called in on like a random Tuesday and was like, "Hey, man, I got a flesh-eating bacteria. They are amputating my leg, and I'm not coming back to work ever again. So good luck with the show." And Harvey was like, "Well, I guess this means you're the head writer now." And I became like Harvey's right-hand man that day. And so Celebrity Justice ran its course, and we started TMZ, and I was right there, and I was one of the managers. I was like Harvey's right-hand guy right from the jump. When we had
a Hollywood story already.
It was so crazy.
Tell us more.
Yeah, we had a staff of just like a few people, and we were looking to grow. And one of the first big stories that I broke was Michael Richards, Kramer from Seinfeld, who went on a crazy racist rant. I was able to get that video and get the whole story and post it. And it turned our brand from a tiny website to an international brand almost overnight. From there, we started TMZ on TV. Fox came to us and wanted to do a television show. I was one of the only people on the staff with TV experience. So I put together the test segments and the pilot, ultimately became the executive producer of TMZ on TV, oversaw the website, then started TMZ Sports, that vertical, which was my baby. I grew that. From the jump, we were breaking crazy stories left and right. You mentioned Ray Rice and Donald Sterling. We broke a bunch of stuff with Aaron Hernandez and the unfortunate death of Kobe Bryant and all that stuff. But yeah, my daughter was born in 2015, and that was the beginning of a process that changed my life and ultimately was the reason I decided to leave TMZ. So I left TMZ in 2021 when my daughter was 6 years old. It was in the pandemic. They had offered me a new contract, a multi-million dollar, multi-year contract extension to stay And after conversations with my wife, I just realized that it wasn't feasible, it wasn't tenable for me to continue at TMZ and also be the father and the husband and the person that I wanted to be. It just wasn't possible to do both things. And so I had to make the decision to walk away from TMZ. So I was appreciative and grateful for the time that I had there. But I also realized that like I had a higher purpose beyond entertainment news.
Hey, you now consider yourself a gossip artist, but let's make sure we'll go on break. And when we come back, you're going to tell us about how you found purpose and why you would leave a multi-million dollar contract. Yeah. So go on break, come back, and I can't wait to hear more, Evan.
Welcome back, everyone. We're here talking with Isaac Shapiro of Clean Logic and Inspiration Foundation and Evan Rosenblum. Today, we are interviewing Evan. Evan, you just talked a little bit about how you decided to leave TMZ to become a better family man, husband, and father. You walked away from a very large, lucrative contract. Can you talk a little bit about, during this process, when did you realize you found your purpose and how that inspired you to make your decision?
So when Sydney was born, she was born at 25 weeks. She was one pound, 9 ounces. And it was a traumatic birth. My wife had severe preeclampsia. She was in organ failure. And the doctors pulled me aside at one point and said, do you have family in town? Because your wife and your daughter are critical and you need some support. In other words, they told me that both my wife and my daughter, it was very possible they weren't going to survive the situation. And so at that moment, I went numb. I'm sorry to go back to the birth, but I think it's important in the overall story. But that day I was completely numb. They ended up stabilizing my wife, and Sydney was born via an emergency C-section a day and a half later. And when she was born, right before she was born, the doctor said, we're looking for something called viable signs of life. If we see something called viable signs of life, we'll try to save her. We'll do everything we can to save your baby. But if not, we'll notice it. She'll come out looking, you know, floppy and limp. And at that point, we'll go into comfort care mode and we'll just try to help her pass as peacefully as possible. So imagine hearing that before your kid's born. So then we're in the emergency room, and the NICU team is there, and they start the procedure. And as soon as they start the C-section, they pull Sydney out. I hear Sydney yell, ah! And she waves her arm in the air. And I am screaming from the top of my lungs, viable signs of life, viable signs, screaming.
Nice.
And they're like, yes, yes. And the NICU team, fantastic people, they went to work and they were able to stabilize Sydney. And they got her up to the NICU, where she spent the next 143 days of her life, where I spent almost every day. I mean, I was there every single day, but we were sleeping there a lot. We were at Cedars-Sinai Hospital in Los Angeles. We were there so often, we basically moved in. We called it Four Cedars. But while Sydney was there, at first, like I only planned on missing like a week or two of work, right, when my daughter was born, because I was planning on, you know, a typical regular birth, no issues. And then when all this happened, it changes your plan. So the first couple days, I had no idea what was going on. They wouldn't let me hold my daughter because she was too fragile to do skin to skin or any of that stuff. She lived in an incubator. And then after a month, my boss called me and asked me when I was coming back to work. And I was like, I hadn't even thought about it. Every single day I was sitting next to my daughter. And finally he was like, look, there's a deal in place for TMZ Sports, and it's really important that you come back to work as soon as you can so we can close this deal. And so I felt pressure to go back to work, and I did. And while I was at work that first week back, I got a call from the doctor at the NICU that told me that they suspected that my daughter had something called necrotizing endocarditis, NEC. And if you've ever been in a NICU, you know that that's like the worst thing you could possibly hear, because most kids that are in the NICU that are diagnosed with NEC die within hours of the diagnosis. Hours. And so I'm at work, I'm back in the office. And the first thing that I did when I got that call is I sprinted to my car and started speeding back to Cedar Sinai. And the whole time I kept thinking to myself, if my daughter dies and I'm not there, I'm going to regret this the rest of my life. I'm going to hate, I'll never forgive myself for going back to work, for feeling like that was more important than being with my daughter in like those critical moments. So that was a moment, that was one of the moments where I decided, like, what am I doing? I ended up getting back to the NICU in time. The doctor said they were going to perform emergency surgery. They were going to remove 33% of my daughter's intestine. She was only 6 weeks old, and she was born at 25 weeks, so 31 gestational weeks. Most kids aren't born until 40. Typical birth is 40 weeks. So my daughter should have still been in the stomach, but instead she's having a massive surgery where they're removing a third of her intestine. And there was a very good chance that she was going to die. They told us that again, like, you should prepare. They came back after the surgery and they said she made it, but we are afraid that she may have suffered, you know, some kind of a medical emergency or something happened during the procedure. So they were able to remove the necrotizing endocolitis. But what ended up happening was that massive surgery was a lot for her little body. And we all believe that's what led to her suffering brain damage. So now she has something called bilateral PVL, which means that if you look at her brain in a scan, it looks like a gunshot. There's holes all the way through it. What they told us at the time was, kids that young, that the pathways in your brain are malleable and they can, even though they were blasted apart by the stress of the surgery, you can still work with these kids and the brainwaves can kind of find different ways to repair themselves and reconnect. So we're like, okay, we'll cross our fingers and hope for the best. So my daughter came home. I took some more time off work. I finally went back. But after that, like everything changed, right? Like when Mike was saying in the previous episode is when they're really, really young, you don't really realize how involved you need to be as a parent yet because they're just tiny, right? You try to feed them and change them and all that stuff. But as my daughter got a little older, her disability became more present, more apparent, and more, became a bigger issue for us, right? She couldn't feed herself. She couldn't walk. She couldn't talk. She needed to go to different kinds of therapies. We had her in every therapy imaginable, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, every single one. And my wife, who was a very, very successful television producer, worked on all the biggest shows on television, Real Housewives, Big Brother, Apprentice, Amazing Race. Like she's Hell's Kitchen. She worked on all the biggest shows. She was a co-executive producer on the Real Housewives when Sydney was born. Had to leave her career to focus full time on Sydney. And after a year or two, it was taking a toll on her. And I was working because TMZ is a really, I was at the office by 5:30 every single morning. And I was working till 5-6 o'clock at night, an hour away. It took me an hour to get home. And when you're in news, the phone never stops ringing. It was right when I would get home, the phone would still ring. On the weekends, the phone would ring. It was very demanding. It was crazy. It was stressful. And when my contract was up in 2021 and they had offered me this extension, I had finally had a conversation with Sam and I was like, I can't do this anymore. I was leaving the office before my daughter woke up. I was coming home after she was asleep. I was missing moments. It was making life harder for Sam. And I finally decided, even though they offered me this contract, I couldn't do it anymore. I was becoming somebody that I didn't want to be. You know, when you think about when you're a kid, the person you want to become, I was not that person anymore. I was angry and I was upset and I wasn't satisfied and fulfilled. And I decided the best thing for me to do was leave that job, find something that would allow me to be more present and engaged husband, father, person. And so I did, I left. And it was really, really hard at the time because, you know, you're used to making this salary. I'd worked my whole life. I'd worked for years to get to this point where I was making a good living. I found success. And then having to leave that was really, really scary.
Evan, when you finally made the decision to leave, talk a little bit about the fear. What was scary about it?
Yeah. I mean, I had a routine for 20 years. And I knew I was really good at my job. I knew how to do it. We had tremendous success. I had a really great salary. And one thing when you have a kid with severe disabilities and you need all these resources, like, you never have enough money. I don't care if you have $20 million in the bank. Like, that's never enough to make you feel like you're going to be able to care for your kid for their, because Sydney's with us for life, right? For the end of my life, or the end of her, whatever. Like, she's with us. She's never, like, we're together forever. Like, and things are, wheelchairs are expensive. Resources are expensive. All the things you need are expensive. And so taking that chance and leaving that guaranteed salary, that consistent, you know, thing, security was scary for me. Cause you know, I was confident in myself, but also you don't know what's going to happen when you walk out that door. So, but that was a risk I was willing to take. And thank goodness I had the support from my wife and my family, who all supported that decision.
Can I jump in real quick about your whole thing? Because one thing over the years that I always have heard from people traveling is how miserable they were, or how they didn't like their job, or this is what's happening. But I'd ask them, why didn't you leave? And most people want to leave. What made you leave? Because that's what I think a lot of people, it's that fear and that consistency.
Yeah. I'll tell you, there was a moment that was the defining moment. And toward the end of my stint with TMZ, I was having panic attacks in my sleep. I was stressed out all the time. I was stressed out from work. I was stressed out from my personal life. I was stressed out for a lot of stuff going on. And I was waking up in the middle of the night with my heart feeling it was beating through my chest. I was breathing hard and I couldn't get, it was panic attacks, full blown panic attacks. And my wife said to me, like, you're going to die. And I said, I know. And I had to do something about it. And so that was it. That was that moment of clarity for me. It was like, I don't want to die. I want to be there for my kids. You know, I have my daughter Sydney. I also have my son Bennett. And I love my family. I love my kids. I didn't want to. It's hard. It's hard to talk about, but you know, it's important. I felt like I had to make that decision. It was the right decision. And even though I knew it was going to be hard, it was the best decision for me and my family. And I pulled the trigger. I did it.
So once you made that decision, what did your career look like? What job did you want to do? And how did you make that decision?
Well, I mean, I was fortunate that there was a job opportunity right out the gate, that somebody had offered me a really good job right when I left TMZ. That it was the first time I was looking for a job in 20 years. So I took this job. I don't want to trash the company or the people too much, but let's just say that when I went there, it wasn't what I thought the job was going to be. Bottom line was, I left that company and then I started working for myself as a consultant. I took a job working for Dana White at the UFC, which was the best job I've ever had in my life. Working for Dana, I was the head of content for a new thing called Power Slap, which is a crazy thing where guys slap fight and it's nuts. But I had a great time working there, and working for the UFC was incredible. And there are great people there and I loved it. I worked for, did a pilot for Fox Sports 1 on baseball card collecting. I had an absolute blast. I'm currently hosting a show with Pac-Man Jones, who's become one of my best friends. Former NFL player who we used to report a lot on TMZ. And then we touched base, we connected and we bonded over the fact that, you know, he has a kid who was born early, and we just connected and we've been working together ever since. And I'm doing a show with him. You know, I started working on projects that I, with people that I like. I'm writing a book about my experience of raising a kid with disabilities, which has been really cathartic for me. And then I'm doing this with you guys. And the second you guys called me and asked me to be a part of this, it was like, yes, this is why I left TMZ, so I could pursue projects like this, where I can take my experience and help pay it forward and help use the things that helped me, or the things that weren't there that I wish were, and help people that are going through what I was going through, maybe worse, and trying to give them hope and some kind of a blueprint of how to get through it.
Yeah, you know, I completely understand what you're saying. Being a special needs parent 100% affects all of the decisions that you make, whether it's career or activities or anything. But I think specifically for this, like, it makes life a lot easier to be able to, being a special needs parent, have control of your career and the things that you want to do? Because there's a lot of the things that you listed that are a huge part of what you can and want to do on a go-forward basis.
Yeah, and I think we have to really recognize just a powerful story, Evan, that I want to go back to, because my journey, I've talked to a lot of parents that have the same concerns as you guys. What do you do after they graduate or when there's no, you know, school program? And I've heard a lot of what the bad side, I wouldn't say the bad side, I've heard a lot of marriages ending because the parents can't
work
together.
That's a fact.
And
that's a fact.
I've heard a lot of that. And I give you so much credit because this, again, purpose that we're finding with the show, but to be able to step up and own for your family, because family is the most important. And so I just want to thank you again for being on this show and telling that story, because I think there is another story that people don't see, how many marriages are basically end in divorce because of this.
There's data to back that up, by the way. That's a true thing that, you know, but for us, you know, for Sam and myself, like, it takes work, but in the best possible way. Like at the core, like Sam and I love each other so much, my wife, and the leaving TMZ freed us up to have, you know, more quality time together and more time with the family. And that really helped our marriage. Because when I was at TMZ, it was taking so much time and energy out of me that I wasn't able to give as much as I wanted to our marriage. And leaving TMZ was the best thing that happened. The other thing that was a huge thing that happened, and Mike, I'm sure you can relate to this too with your daughter. At first, I don't want to say I was in denial when Sydney was born those first couple of years, but it was like I didn't truly accept what it was. You know, every time that I would hear a diagnosis from a doctor or something like that, I would think about, okay, well, so she's not going to be able to do this. Is she going to be able to do this? Okay, well, maybe if we do this, she'll be able to talk one day or walk one day or this and that and the other. And then there was a point where I just accepted who she is and what she is. And once you come to terms and you have acceptance of all that, like, look, man, she has cerebral palsy and brain damage. She's nonverbal, but she understands things and she wants to communicate, and she's got a big personality in there, and she might not be able to communicate and articulate the best way possible. But like, I've gotten to know her and love her, and just I stopped worrying about all these other things and just focus on appreciating her for who she is. And the moment that I came to terms with that and accepted that, it changed my relationship with her in such an unbelievable way. And I'm in such a great place with her right now. I honestly, from the bottom of my heart, I couldn't imagine my life without her. And people say like, oh, do you wish that you could take this all away and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I don't know. I don't want to play the hypothetical game. But what I do know is that I love her so much and I appreciate every single day with her.
She's got you in shape too, Evan. It looks like you're doing some wheelchair runs. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about what you're doing with Sydney and some of those things that we see on social media.
Yeah, well, I was inspired by Rick and Dick Hoyt. I was watching an episode of Real Sports years ago, way before Sydney was born. And I saw the special on this father and son. Son had cerebral palsy, was nonverbal. And he was one of the first people to get a communication device, a computer communication device. And the father took the son on a run. And when the kid was able to use the communication device, one of the first things he said was, I love this. Let's go on a run. And so they ended up going on runs together and they became legends in Boston. They've done marathons and ultra marathons and triathlons and all the different things. And I remember watching this before Sydney was born and just being like, wow, those guys are amazing. And then when Sydney was born, I turned to my friend Luke and I said, I'm gonna take her on runs like Rick and Dick Hoyt. And then I took Sydney out on a run and she absolutely loved it, because she gets to blast music in her chair and she waves at everybody and she's so happy. And my brother and I started the Sydney Strong Run Club. And now people come out and go running with us. And we've done, you know, we've done races, we've done 10Ks. She loves it. I love it. It keeps me in shape. It keeps, you know, she's the boss, man. She's in charge. I just do what she wants.
Well, Evan, just that's amazing work you're doing with Sydney, getting you out and running and keeping in shape. But I think what's really important, just as we close out the show for our third episode, again, thank you for sharing everything. I want you to share with our guest, what is it that you feel is going to take people to that next level to get to find their purpose in life?
Yeah. I mean, look, one of the reasons I'm inspired by you guys is, you know, you guys started a company from scratch, and you've made it your mission to not only make quality products, but to create an accessible workspace, to hire people with disabilities, to really do honorable and noble things. And I think that's great. What I think my purpose is, you know, I have this platform, and I want to help put a spotlight on things that could help people, families in the special needs community. Because like I said earlier, like, you're just thrust into it one day and there's no guidebook, and you know, it's hard to find resources. It's hard to find people that can relate and understand. And so I want to be that light for people. We've had some great mentors in the special needs community that have helped us out a lot, but I've heard from a lot of people that they don't know where to turn. If they're having issues at schools, like, we had to sue the school district, and we won because Sydney wasn't getting the resources that she's obligated to have. And if other people are having issues, I want to be able to tell people, like, hey, we've been through this. I can help guide you to get your kid the resources that they need. If you're having issues psychologically, like I was, I went and I got a therapist, and therapy has been massive for me. You know, I want to help steer people to those kind of groups. I want to, you know, traveling with a kid in a wheelchair is crazy difficult. Even the process of giving an adaptive van so you can drive your kid around, all these things you have to figure out with, like, go. It's like, we've been through this, and I feel like we have a lot of knowledge that I want to share. And being on this show, you know, we want to talk to entrepreneurs and people who are doing fulfilling things and are seeing needs, not just in you know, the regular typical world, but also needs in our community, the special needs community. And they are seeking to solve problems that we have. And I think connecting with these entrepreneurs on this show and being able to talk to them and find out, like, what inspired you to pursue this career and to solve this problem? I think not only is it great for people to get information, I didn't know that product existed. Like, we're going to talk to a guy who created a diaper for people who outgrew children's diapers but aren't big enough for adult diapers, which is a need that we need in our family bad, because my daughter's 9.5 years old. And so, like, I can't wait to talk to that guy and find out his story. But also, I can't wait to turn people onto that product, because there are a lot of people who need that product that don't know about it. And there are so many conversations that I can't wait to have for my own personal interest and need, and also just to share that information with other people. And I'm so honored and proud and happy to be a part of this for all of those reasons. And really, I want to take this opportunity to thank you both for creating this platform and giving us the opportunity to share this with the rest of the world.
Yeah. Thank you, Evan, very much for sharing your story. It's amazing, truly inspirational. That's the thing. Our podcast is going to feature real conversations and practical advice for visionary entrepreneurs, innovative creators, and everyday advocates who are redefining what's possible. So thank you.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And look, I can't wait to continue with this show. If you like this show, please follow us on social media. Go to inspirationfoundation.org and get, you know, information on how to be a part of our mission. And share this with a friend. I promise you, what you're going to get are great conversations with great people moving forward. So support us, support the mission, and we will see you next time.